Okay, good morning, everyone. Morning. It was a nice introduction of the hymn before last. It said, did not know your love within, had no taste for heaven's joys. Then your spirit gave me life, opened up your word to me. And that was, I thought, was a good introduction. Well, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
It's good to be back. It's been a few weeks since we were here last, and life has just been absolutely crazy. As anybody follows us on Facebook, you know that it's been quite a journey the last couple of weeks. And
do you find the traffic increases on the motorway each time?
Well, the traffic was a bit crazy this morning because we got off the motorway and found that there was a diversion, so we couldn't go anywhere. And it was just like nose to tail. But there we are. Yeah, the church and the superstation has been really busy, and doors are opening and opportunities are presenting themselves, which are way beyond what we can do. And I love the way that, you know, with this, the speaking of life, he talks about something small turns into something bigger. And we've now got the biggest Baptist church in the town asking if they can come on board and do another night, which is great. Don't speak too soon. They have to have a meeting on the 17th, 18th, because the way that they're structured, the minister is all for it, the deacon group is all for it, and when they said yes, they'll support us, one of the deacons said, well, hang on, why, instead of giving us soup, why don't they start a different night so that they could actually help in a much bigger way than they were thinking originally. I'm thinking, yeah, great, brilliant. Every week is different, but in terms of the church service, we started off with a handful, and we've now got over two handfuls, so statistically it's great, but it's starting from very small, and it's still very small compared to the rest of the churches there. But
Have you got enough helpers?
Last week we had 40 people in, 10 of which classed themselves as volunteers, and 30 were people who haven't done the volunteer forms. So it's just gone crazy, and winter hasn't started yet. So you've got the actual homeless people, you've got the people with the mental health issues, with the alcohol issues, drug issues. We've got people then who are just the sad and lonely, so to speak. And it's all broken people being drawn in to the superstation. And what we're finding is that when people, word's getting round, and people are coming along then early for the church service as well. And if everybody who's come over the last month actually came on the same night, we'd have over 20. It's been nuts. It's great. And it's really humbling because you can see God's doing something there in Llanelli, and other churches, other groups, other Christians coming on board to actually help out with what we started. So we started off when it was like 50-50, half of us Christians, half of us not Christians, and the balance has swung now into very much, look, this is God's thing. And it's just really humbling to actually see it all happening around us. At the moment, in the church service, we're looking at the fruit of the Spirit. And that's found in Galatians 5, verses 22 to 24. Galatians 5, verse 22 to 23, says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Okay, how do you identify a fruit tree? Okay, kids? Okay, yeah. By its fruit.
Has
it got fruit on it? Okay. For the recording, Clara said you identify a fruit tree by its fruit, right? So you identify an apple tree by its apples, and you identify the banana tree by its monkeys. So, good one, Clara. Yeah, you identify a fruit tree by its fruit. So you identify an apple tree, and we've got an apple tree in the house. If anybody wants apples, we can bring some next week if you want some cooking apples. Yeah? And you identify a pear tree with the pears and so on and so forth. So when you consider the fruit of the Spirit, this is how you identify the presence of God. You identify God by the fruit. Just like a tree, unless fruit is growing, you can't tell it as easy. You can identify an apple tree as an apple tree without any fruit on it because of its shape and its structure and its leaves, but it's not as easy to identify without the growing fruit. The apple tree in our garden, you can't help but tell that it's an apple tree at the moment. It's just, it's going to fall over, I think. But it's great. But similarly, if the fruit of God's presence is not evident, it will be more difficult to identify believers. If you're hiding your fruits, and you're not leaving the fruit be seen, it's more difficult to identify. I've heard it said, probably by Richard, that there is only one fruit of the Spirit, and that is love. And that all the other fruits are hanging off that one fruit. I'm not educated in linguistics of the Bible, but it's something to do with the structure of the passage and the way it's set out. It's something I picked up somewhere along the way, anyway. So therefore, the evidence of God's presence is therefore love. Remember Ross Judson's song? By this shall all men know that you are my disciples. How? Because you love one another. That's taken from John 13, 34 to 35. John 13, verses 34 to 35 says, a new commandment I give you. Love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. And notice, as I have loved you, we are following Christ's example. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So therefore, love is the fruit that identifies Jesus' followers. I'm not going to attempt to go through the whole of the fruit of the Spirit in one sermon. Don't worry, we'll be here all day if you did. So today, I would like to talk about joy. So under the umbrella of love, the first one is joy. There's enough misery and uncertainty in this world. Whenever you look around, people are suffering. At a local level, you know, we prayed for that guy with the leg. You know, we've got Peter who needs a break. You've got Hugh with health problems. You've got, you know, even within this room, there are different issues, different things that affect us. You look around us, you've got the homeless, you've got the poor. You've got those with mental health issues. We prayed for Danny earlier. Internationally, you've got Trump versus the Rocket Man. What, poking each other with sticks to see which one will break first.
Is that talking about mental health issues?
That's a happy accident. So today, with so much uncertainty and everything, let's talk about joy. Okay, what does the word joy mean to you? And again, this is sort of chip in.
Well, it stands for Jesus, others, and then yourself.
Ooh, that's a good one. For the recording, Jesus, others, then yourself. Yeah. Joy.
Anyone? Happiness.
Pardon?
Happiness.
Happiness. Okay.
Contentedness.
Contentedness. I'm repeating it because of the recording in case it doesn't pick up. Kids?
Enjoying what you're doing.
Enjoying, yes. Enjoyment.
It's all the nice things in life.
The nice things, yes. What did George say in Llanelli when we asked him that?
I enjoy having a good grumble about something.
He enjoys having a good grumble about something. So joy means different things to different people, and you know, it's all the positives. But I'd like to show today that whilst you can describe happiness as joy, there's more to joy than happiness. Let's turn to James 1, verses 2 to 4. And this poses a quandary, which I'll seek to answer as we go along. James 1, verses 2 to 4. Because we've talked about all the positives, you've got positive feedback coming back. But it says, James 1, verse 2, consider it joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Okay, so how can you have joy even in trials? Anyone?
By enjoying being trialed.
I didn't hear that. Enjoy being trialed? No.
Focusing on the outcome.
Focusing on the outcome. Yeah, that's what James was talking, the outcome. Anybody else?
Knowing that you're on the winning side.
Great. Knowing that you're on the winning side. Anyone else?
Well, I think, yeah, it can drive you into real prayer, real heart-rending prayer, be it for yourself or be it for another person.
Yeah, it drives you into prayer. So is that, so what's that mean? That's the closeness with God in your praying closeness? Last week, when I asked this in Llanelli, I was quite taken aback because we had a couple and a teenager came in for the first time. And she said something along the lines of this, and I'm not quoting directly, this is my recollection of it. She goes, "I'm joyful in trials because it means I'm still alive." Think about it. I'm joyful in trials because it means I'm still alive. Then she went on to say something along the lines of, "I enjoy the seconds because we can't be sure that we'll get minutes." I thought, wow. Having the interactive fellowship format, that was just, I was taken aback. I thought to myself, wow, what more can you say, really? That was quite a profound thing to say. And the point I was going to make is what Richard made, actually, is that the joy in it is to see the bigger picture. You could see the outcomes. And you see how the trials make you a better person. But she made the point that even in trials, we should be thankful for what we have, because at least we have life. Where there's life, there's hope. Talking to her and her partner afterwards, they said that they'd heard via the teenager, actually, who was a friend of a friend or something. I'm not quite sure what, you know, who they were. They'd heard about the church service, and they said, wow, you come in here, and there's a small group, you can talk to people, and the interaction and everything. We walk into the big Elim church, and there's hundreds of people there, but you feel intimidated. And I thought to myself, well, praise God. We may be small, but, you know, hopefully we'll see them again. Hopefully we'll see them again. Who knows? Anyway, back to James. He links the joy in the trial with the lessons we learn from the trial. The trial produces perseverance, which produces maturity and completeness. The Bible dictionary I have links joy with salvation. Okay, what's the scariest thing you can think of?
Without God. I told
the answer that I told him. No. Last week, Clara said, well, if I was a Pokemon, and there was a big, nasty big Pokemon. No, do you want to come and say it anyway, Clara? No, she's all the time now. Yeah. Okay, just be quick. Okay.
They got sent. The scary thing is, if we got teleported to the Pokemon world, and then this big, nasty Pokemon came, that would be scary.
It would be scary. If we were all...
Yeah, it's a Pokemon that turns people into stone.
Yeah, okay.
Oh. So that would definitely be scary.
Yeah. That would be scary. Okay, back in the real world, any other anything else? What are you scared of? What would be scary?
Anything happening to her.
Falling into a massive... Bottom.
Falling into a massive pit, yeah, that would be scary.
And
anything happen to Clara? Anything else? Okay, you get the idea. There's things in this world. Okay, what happens if the Rocket Man does press the buttons on and
yes.
Oh, Kim Jong Un?
Knowing you're going to heaven, that's lovely.
That's lovely. Okay, flip that round. What's the opposite?
Going to hell.
Absolutely. Well, Yeah. What about having to pay the penalty for our own sins? Ooh. Now, that would be scary, wouldn't it?
That's what you've done.
But, well, as the Bible said, nobody's perfect. What about having to pay the penalty for our own sins? That would be really scary.
Well, if it weren't given by my parents, it would probably be a 2-year pocket money ban.
2-year pocket money ban, don't you think? That would be scary.
Well, it would be scary.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's let's read a passage in 1 John 4, verses 17 to 18. And this is in the context of love, okay? And the connection between love and salvation. Oh, sorry, not love, joy and salvation. Wrong one. Let's read the passage, 1 John 4, 17 to 18. And this is an extract from the chapter about love. It says, "This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence, on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love." Okay, joy is the assurance that we are saved. Under the Jewish calendar, today's Yom Kippur, Atonement. So it's fitting, really, to remember the great sacrifice that Jesus made for us. The sin is gone. We are at one with him. We have no fear. We have no fear of the judgment day because Jesus has taken away that punishment. He's paid the penalty. The sin is gone. Just imagine on the day of judgment when, okay, it's quite fitting actually. James was talking about the book of evil, right? Just imagine if there was a book and all of your life was set out in that book. And they said, "Gary, you've done X, Y, Z. That's not good, is it? You're guilty." What does Jesus say? Jesus says, "No, sorry. No, I paid the penalty for that sin. That sin, no, that's gone. Whoop, line through it. What about this one? No, that's gone. Line through it. That's gone. Line through it." So when God looks at us in judgment, do we have anything to fear? No, because Jesus has wiped away those sins. The sin has gone from the east to the west. The sin is gone. Now, isn't that amazing? Now, can you think of anything more joyful than that thought? The presence of God, i.e. the indwelling of the Spirit, reminds us of this, and hence joy is a fruit of the Spirit. That type of joy and peace of mind is evidence of God's presence in us. It's not easy when things go wrong. But even when things do, we can generally look back and see how God has guided our path and how things have worked out for the best overall. God has shaped the way things have been. Even though we don't like the trial, when you see the bigger picture, we can see the joy in it. As it says in James, and I'll explain how it works later. This is quite interesting. I'll get back to that, hold that thought. Okay, the Bible talks about joy in heaven. And when is that? Anybody? When's there joy in heaven?
When the sinner repents.
When the sinner repents. Never heard this before. Okay, let's have a look at Luke 15. This is a great chapter because it's got the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the coin, and the prodigal son. Luke 15, verses 1 to 7, the parable of the lost sheep. It says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.' Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbours together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over the 99 righteous persons that do not need to repent. That's joy in heaven when somebody turns and returns. Similarly, in the parable of the lost coin, there is joy. Verses 8 to 10. "Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house and search carefully till she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbours together and says, 'Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin.' In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Joy in heaven. Joy, salvation. Joy is the life that people have when they turn around. Let's cut to the end of the parable of the prodigal son. Luke 15, verse 20 onwards. This is when he returns. "So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, the father saw him and was filled with compassion for him and ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. And the son said, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to the servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." So you can see that the joy in heaven is when people turn round. But think about it. God allowed the sheep to go astray. He allowed the separation before the sheep was found. He allowed the coin to be lost for a while. He allowed the son to go astray. And it's the same with us sometimes. He allows us freedom to wander. Then he pulls us back. And we learn from our mistakes. It's better not to wander. You know, it's better not to have all the pain and the anguish of that separation. But when people do, God pulls them back. And when he does, there's joy in heaven itself when they believe. So when we look around us, some people are distraught. They see the people not coming to church. They see people, they see the sinners, they see people like that out and about. They see people in prisons, they see people, all the rest of it. And they say, "Oh, they're all lost." What's the Bible say? There's always hope. There's always hope for them to turn around and come to him. And that is grace, no matter what people have done. And that's where we're seeing things in Llanelli, seeing people coming in. They're not bad people. They've done bad things. They're not bad people. There's always hope. And there's joy when they turn around. Okay. Who or what character is the most ridiculously happy person that you can think of? Ned Flanders. Do you know him from The Simpsons?
No.
Hmm? No? Oh, he's the Christian character in The Simpsons who's ridiculously happy and everything is oakley doakley and very happy. And okay. Anybody else?
But he does have his moments when he gets angry.
He gets angry sometimes, yes. Anybody else? Who's the most ridiculously happy person you can think of? Richard? No.
I'm the most ridiculously happy person.
Brilliant. Dorothy's the most ridiculous. Yeah, Clara?
Joy from inside out.
Oh, joy from inside out.
Even there is no positive side, she tries to create a positive side.
That's it. There's a character in the film Inside Out, isn't it? The joy character, the joy emotion. we mentioned happiness in the context of joy. But do you know happiness in the NIV is only mentioned 6 times? Ooh. But joy is mentioned, I can't remember, I didn't write it down, but it's 216 times, I think. 200 times. And the 6 times that happiness is mentioned, it's all to do with physical matters, like physical circumstances. There's no need to turn there, but there's even mention of joy and happiness as being distinct in Esther 8, verse 16. For the Jews, it was a time of happiness and joy, gladness and honour. It shows that they are different things. Sometimes to understand the concepts of the Bible, it's useful to look at what's been written about it outside the Bible. That's one thing with the Christian Counseling course that they emphasise is, well, look, if you just confine your learning to the Bible, you only get a small amount of what has been revealed through research and knowledge and stuff along, you know, ever since. So according to a blog article in Psychology Today, this is the difference between happiness and joy. It says happiness is dependent on external forces. Things you have or people who are around you can make you happy. If you've got a new car, if you have a great day out with your family or friends, if you have a promotion in work, pay rise. These things, physical things, can make you happy. Happiness is formed and is dependent on the physical realm. The things around us can make us happy or sad. Joy, on the other hand, is internal and spiritual. It's not dependent on external factors. And this is how you can have joy in trials, as suggested in James 1. Joy is something inside you, whereas happiness is a response to things outside you. The article in Psychology Today was a secular publication, went on to describe the author's mother, who had divorced her father, so she lost her love, she lost her house, she'd retired, so she'd lost her career, she'd lost everything physical. She'd lost her riches and ended up retiring in a beach hut. You know, these like shacks up along the coast, like a one-bedroom beach hut. But despite all this, she had an inexplicable joy that all around her could see. And I'd like to quote the author's observations. She says, joy comes when you make peace with who you are, where you are, why you are, and who you are not with. When you need nothing more than your truth and the love of a good God to bring peace, then you have settled into the abiding joy that is not rocked by relationships. It's not rocked by anything. I thought, wow, this is a secular blog thing. And she's pointing up and saying, look, glory to a good God to actually give that joy. She clearly had the joy that only God's presence can bring. The importance of faith, believe it or not, is getting more credence within psychology. And they people are seeing the benefits of faith in people's attitude and persona and that positivity that having a faith, having hope, can bring them. Some people will say, that nonsense, it's no God, therefore isn't that. But there's growing movement within psychology, within science, that looks up and sees God in these situations. So it was interesting to see this particular article acknowledged that joy was coming from the peace that was there with the presence of a good God. From a Christian perspective, we can see this as an example of the fruit of God's Spirit. It must have been evident for them. I don't know whether it was, they were, well, I presume they were Christians, but they could have been talking about another God. But, you know, it's that acknowledgement that joy comes from within. It's a spiritual thing. The Bible gives us an example of this. When Paul in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 7 to 18, again, he gives a similarly bleak example of himself. But notice the hope and life that he wrote about. 2 Corinthians 4, starting in verse 7. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God, not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may also be revealed in our mortal body. So then, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. It is written, I believed, therefore I have spoken. Since we have the same spirit of faith, we also believe and therefore speak, because we know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus from the dead also raises us with Jesus and presents us with you to himself. For this is for your benefit, so that the grace that is reaching more and more people may cause thanksgiving to overflow to the glory of God. Therefore, don't lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. I love that passage. Despite everything that happens to us. And what happened to Paul? He looked up and he could see the eternal. He could see beyond the temporary to the eternal. Clearly, when we're looking at joy as a fruit of the Spirit, it's more than happiness. Yes, it is happiness, but it's more than happiness. We can't go around like Ned Flanders in a permanent state of happiness. We're human. Joy is the internal assurance that Jesus has died for us, and that we do not fear judgment. We're safe in his hands. Joy is more than the external factors of life, more than the seen. Joy is in the unseen, the eternal. It's more than the temporary physical world. It's the knowledge and assurance that God's Spirit gives us of the eternal. That life in him, being at one with him. So have a joy-filled week and remember what Jesus has done for you.